Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who people in 10,000 years' time will still be reading and listening to. If you're listening to in 10,000 years' time, hello. From the past. Do you understand my language? It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much! Hello, hello! Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Though I was playing with my kids' LOL dolls today. It's pretty cool, right? They call it Rahalastapa. And I call them lol dolls, and that annoys my kids. They're lol dolls. No, you know, not much is going on at the moment because all that's happening is I'm writing my Radio 4 sitcom, Relativity, Series 4, which should be out in 2022, and researching Rahalastapa. So, you know, there's not much going on. But I notice that they're doing a new Willy Wonka film. Have you seen this? They're doing the origin story of Willy Wonka. Now, it should be good. Paul King's directing it and Simon Farnaby's writing it, so that's going to be good. But, you know, I want to see, you know, they should do this for everyone. I would like to see the journey that Charlie Bucket's sperm takes to get to the... I think that genuinely could be quite a good kids' film, because they do... Or they do, even if it's not Charlie Bucket's sperm, but it'd be better if it is Charlie Bucket's sperm, because you can then call the film Bucket Fanny. But it's... But, you know, I think they do all these things about death, not only soul and feelings and stuff. I think you could do a good sort of adventure of the sperm's travel journey, couldn't you? That'd be a good little cartoon sperm. I think it'd be good. It'd be like sort of Finding Nemo. I think it could have... Squid Games. It could be a little like Squid Games. Thank you, David, for it. Or a version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory where Charlie becomes aware of the fact that it's sort of weird that all the kids who've been chosen apart from him are sort of such caricatures of evil and realises that it's an artifice, like the Truman Show, and has to try and escape from... That'd be quite good. If you're going to try and reinvent stuff, just, you know, I've got lots of ideas. So thank you very much for everyone who's streaming at home. If you're listening to this podcast, you will still be able to catch up on the videos. We're not going to put them on YouTube this time, so head to richchanning.com and you can watch and see what's going on. You can see my fancy boots. and marvel how tall I am. It's beautiful. I'm really enjoying it. But we're going to crack on. Do buy my books, The Problem with Men, and what's the other one called? Would You Rather? That's it. I've written so, and I've got so many books, it's hard to remember what they're all called. They'll be reading Would You Rather in probably six months' time. I don't think that one's going to stand the test of time, but you never know. You never know. You never know. There's only one way to find out, and that is to buy it. Anyway, let's crack on, because we went on for a long time last week. Went on so long last week, it was almost this week, wasn't it? But here we are in this week. It happened anyway. Will you please welcome now my guest? He is probably best known for appearing as McGollick-y on Top Coppers. I wonder if they're going to make another series of that. I wonder if there's another series of Top Coppers in the pipeline. It's Phil Wang, ladies and gentlemen. It's Phil Wang. Phil Wang. Phil Wang, is that your glasses Hi. Case on? It can't be. There's a glasses case on that chair.
No, there must be
Dave Gorman's.
Oh gosh, are there glasses? Let's have a look.
Well, he's gone. He's out of here. Is there anything
in there? Specs in it.
Great.
So good news is they're still here. Bad news is he's not going to be able to find his way back.
Yeah, I can. Those are good. I'll keep those. I got Richard E. Grant's perfume, didn't I? He left his on the seat. It's a good little scam, this seat. That's two things I've got off this seat in 260 episodes of this fucking shit. Welcome. Nice pair of glasses. Hello, Phil. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, Richard. Doing well? Doing well.
Good.
I think I'm doing all right.
I think you are doing very well. Oh.
Yeah, I'm doing okay, man. I'm cool. Just running around. I've just moved house. I'm mainly just like going to John Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you bought or are you up renting up?
John Lewis.
Yeah.
I still. I just buy the bits I like.
Yeah. If you're buying furniture, are you buying furniture or are you buying stuff for your kitchen?
Well, and just linens and sheets and stuff.
Yeah.
And today I had to go back because there was gunk on a sheet I bought.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, from John, it was John Lewis gunk. I mean, high quality gunk,
yeah.
But still gunk. And because the funny thing about John Lewis is that it has this legend as, oh, they're custom. They're so good. They bend over backwards to correct any. They perform harakiri. If there's anything wrong with one, like, you will gain one life of a John Lewis employee. And so I was like, so when I saw this smudge, I was like, oh, great. I'll call up. They'll send me another. In their humiliation,
yeah,
and I'll keep this one with a smudge, and I'll just wash it,
yeah,
because that's all that is really required.
Yeah.
And then I'll have two sheets. But they emailed and they called and they said you're gonna have to go into the shop where you bought it. They don't give a fuck anymore.
They don't. Give
and
a fuck.
And so I went in today to the counter with this, and I brought out this badly repackaged fitted sheet. Because I'm like, this is messed up. This is John Lewis. I'm not going to pack it nicely like I'm that little bitch. I'm gonna make a statement. And I took it out of my bag. And before I said a word, the lady behind the counter said, I can't take that. And I was like, what happened to this legendary custom? I was so angry. And eventually she talked herself around into accepting it and gave me a replacement for it. And I was like, I can't believe this. This is the last time I ever... And then I thought... Well, seeing as I'm here, I do need some bath mats. So I went and I started thinking, is this their new business model where every time you buy something, a bunch of things, they make sure one has muck on it?
Yeah.
Like the cashier just, when they go, hey, look behind you, and then they smudge a bit on it. And then so you come back to replace it, and then you go, well, I need a toilet brush.
Yeah.
And see, yeah.
It could be that. I think if I was John Lewis...
I'd definitely go around the shop wanking onto stuff. I'd definitely, wouldn't you? It's a nice shop.
Yeah.
I just at night, you know, not when people are around. It's not, okay. Harvey Weinstein thing. It's just like someone's going to get that. Let's see if they bring it back.
Right.
See if they bring it back or they keep it, and they keep a note. Phil Wang kept the spunky sheets. Interesting. I think that's pretty bad that there's you buy some. Well, that's not right, is it?
Yeah, and I'm trying to think where does gunk get introduced into the process?
Well, I've told you.
Oh, right. This was black gunk, though. This is like grey gunk. Oh, grey, okay. Gunk.
John Lewis is a very old man, but as it gets. That's it. He must be 200 years old by now. He's rising from the grave, squeezing out. There's some worms in it. Didn't anticipate this going this way. So, you know, that's what I love about this show. You never know. Well, congratulations on the move. What do you remember about Top Coppers? Was that a nice experience?
I love Top Coppers so much. I still remember being told that I got the part. I couldn't believe it. I'd never got a part in anything. I still haven't since. It's my only role. It was such a fun show, Top Coppers, and so funny. And I just remember being shown the script before the audition and laughing at it. And you'll know, you're shown scripts of things, and very rarely that you actually laugh.
Sure.
And this one, I was really laughing. I wanted so badly to get the part, and I did. And it's sad that it's only ever had one series, but it's now on Netflix, that the first series.
It is on Netflix, so you never know.
Yeah.
Could be brought back. Then I'll have egg on my face.
Yeah.
Because I told John, I made fun of John Cairns about it.
Oh, okay.
I asked him if there was another series in the pipeline, 4 years after it was last on. Yeah. And,
he was the main role, so it is more his fault than mine that it didn't.
It is. I'm not blaming you at all.
Yeah, no, me neither.
I haven't watched it. I won't watch it. I refuse to watch it. I've been very much enjoying. I've been listening to your the audiobook version. I also have it in hard copy as well, that in like old fashioned people. But yeah. If this is going to last another 500 years, you need it copied down. The audiobooks don't last. it's called Side Splitter.
Yeah, Side Splitter, because it's funny, but it's also about me having two sides, British and Malaysian Chinese. Yeah, it took
and no more
months.
Than that, just two. There's two sides.
Yeah, there's only two sides of me, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I do really like it. I think it's, it's interesting as a comedian, I think, to have the perspective of both being foreign and not being foreign.
Yeah.
Okay, so knowing both cultures.
Yeah.
And that, because, like, comedy, and certainly that kind of comedy... the kind of comedy that's either reaffirming. There's a lot of comedy that reaffirms, and it can border into racism, where this is how we are, and let's laugh at other cultures that are different. But that's what, you know, certain 70s comedy was often like that, and never occurring to people that if you were in one of the other cultures, they'd be looking at your culture and laughing at things in you. So it's a way of reinforcing your own culture. And your own the crazy things in your own culture by laughing at other people for doing things differently, but if you have both cultures or two cultures, you're able to step outside and realize what is ridiculous about.
Yeah, and sort of laugh both ways.
Yeah.
And kind of have your cake and eat it in a sense.
Yeah,
because I can tell jokes that are in anyone else's mouth unequivocally racist about Chinese people.
Yeah.
And then go, it's fine. I'm allowed. I have license. Totally. I honestly think if I wasn't mixed race like this, I wouldn't have ever become a comedian, because I think to become a comedian, to be enticed into this line of work and this lifestyle, you have to feel like you stand outside society or people who seem to have their things together or an identity that is solid. And so comedies, at least for me, it was a way of forming an identity sort of after the fact.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's interesting because you feel, within the book, you talk about feeling that you're sort of, in each culture, you don't fit in, even though you're both, you don't fit into either, because in China and Malaysia, then you will, people will see you as a white guy. And in Britain, you came to Britain thinking, oh, now I'll be accepted. And then you're seen as an Asian guy.
Yeah, totally.
So it's that not fit that feeling of not fitting in, certainly as a kid, I think is obviously drives comedy, I think, for
oh, definitely. Yeah, I think not fitting in can go one of two ways. It can either make you feel ostracized or it can make you into an egotist because you realize, you think, I'm special. Because I think everyone, we all live life thinking we're the main character in a movie, all of us. But when you literally look different to everyone, that delusion has a little more weight. It feels a bit more like it is true because you look different from everyone else, you know? And so maybe that was part of it. And that's why I think, like, if I'd been born completely Malaysian and grew up in Malaysia, completely white British and grown up in Britain, then I wouldn't have become a comedian, I don't think. I don't know.
Maybe. But there's lots of interesting things in it. I was very interested in the chapter about mind your language, which I wasn't anticipating being something you would know about as you are a young man.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, there was a sitcom in the 70s called Mind, and briefly in the 80s called Mind Your Language, which was set in a language school.
It's English as a second language class in a night school in London.
Yeah.
A sitcom started in 1977, I think. And it was about Mr. Brown, who taught English as a second language, to a classroom of, conveniently, one of each race in the world. Like a university prospectus, but to the extreme, to a whole class. It's for the most part, it's an excuse for these characters. There's a Sikh guy, there's a Hindu woman, there's a Chinese lady, there's a Greek guy, an Italian guy, and it's an excuse for all these different cultures to get English wrong in their own way. Mm-hmm. And it is now seen as one of the quintessential racist old British sitcoms, an example of, look how far we've come. And I dedicate a whole chapter in the book to this sitcom that is now, you know, quite obscure and largely culturally rejected, but I make a case for it because it's as racist as people might think it is. It's huge in Malaysia. People love it. It's on right now. We get our TV 4 decades after you guys are done with it. We get hand-me-downs, basically, button TV. It's on at the time, and it's on again now. It's just on repeat, again and again and again. It's our friends. It's just on again and again and again. And my Uncle David, I called him to talk about the show, and he was like, yeah, it's on now. It's my favorite show. I'm so happy. And I speak also to Sindhu V, comedian Sindhu V, who's Indian, and she said, yeah, growing up, everyone in India loved it too. Well, you know, her family loved it. And it, you know, as crass as the humor is, it was a representation of these people who, in a big British show, an internationally huge show. And, you know, you want to make a case as much as you like about how much we've progressed in terms of racial sensitivity, but you'd be hard pressed to find a show that exists now that has the racial diversity of Mind Your Language.
Yeah. Well, I watched a bit of it again. I genuinely, as a kid, I loved this show. Right? I loved it. And it was very much as of its time. Mm. You couldn't make it as it is now. But I watched a bit of it again, having read your chapter. And it's, you know, it's interesting because it isn't, they're very sympathetic characters. It's not really, you know, as you say in the book, the principal of the school is kind of racist.
Yeah, she's unpleasant. She's the
it's about people struggling with the English language, and it's broad strokes.
Oh yeah, but the jokes are not good.
Many of them are not good. Yeah. Some of them are good.
A couple are good. Yeah, and a couple of the performances are really, really good.
Yeah, and it's as you say in the book, it's more the sexism is probably more of a problem than the racism. Yeah. But it is showing those cultures, and as you say, people in those cultures would have found it funny because it's a friendly sort of fun look at cartoonish look at nationality.
Yeah.
I don't think they should bring it back. That's not what I'm saying.
I don't say that either. No. I'm not crazy, but I'm just trying to. I'm just trying to look at it with a more nuanced eye, maybe. And I get to interview Pixie Lim, who played the Chinese character, Su Li, in Mind Your Language. And she's actually from Malaysia. She's Chinese-Malaysian as well, which was great. And she's really wonderful. She's been acting forever. You know, she has her IMDb goes from, I think, 1964 to 2021. Yep. Like, she's still going. It's crazy. She's incredible. But her character, Chung Su Li, was just this little red book waving Mao obsessed Chinese communist.
Yep.
And her only character trait was that she said L's instead of R's and R's instead of S. So she said, "This is ridiculous. How dare you?" And she was like, it was so hard to speak like that because no one talks like it. It's really, really difficult. But the trouble was, she'd come in and say things like, the marketplace is a depraved arena for capitalistic devils. And you go, okay, she's mixed up her L's and her R's there. But aside from that, that's pretty good English. Why is she in this class? You know? So logically, the whole show doesn't always hold up.
But there's one of the scenes I saw was her at Speaker's Corner. And it's kind of, in a way, it's sort of forward-looking. There's some liberal people say that we're the friends of China and we want to, the people in China are all miserable, they have a terrible time and we want to help them. And she's going, no, everyone's happy and, you know, and she loves Chairman Mao and all this. And then they, the friends of China, meaning middle-class liberals, start fighting this actual Chinese person. Well,
yeah,
and it's, you know, it's actually, way, yeah, yeah. It's actually quite, you know, progressive in some ways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
other ways, not so much.
Yeah. But I just found it very, very interesting. Yeah, yeah. And I kind of set myself a challenge of saying, can I write a whole chapter of a sitcom no one watches anymore?
Well, you did it, and it made me very happy to, and it made me happy to go back and look at it again. But in 1970s Britain, which I do remember, yeah, was properly full on racist. Okay, so Mind Your Language is nothing compared,
sure,
to just other stuff that was on TV.
That's true.
You know, and just even thinking like children's nursery rhymes had like proper racial epithets, and you're not allowed, mm-hmm, to, like, you were taught as a kid.
Yeah.
The original Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe is not tiger. It's not a tiger. And, you know, that language, you know, as I was growing up, was absolutely ingrained in the English language.
Yeah. And so, do you remember when something like Mind Your Language was playing? Was there something that sort of grated, or were you so... Were you so racist?
I think I was.
Was it so much part of the water, essentially, that you swam in that it?
I mean, you know, there was much worse things than Mind Your Language that I think that everyone sort of accepted, you know, and not many people were complaining about. And I think that's, I think you may, was it you talking about Bernard Manning, or was that someone else talking about Bernard Manning? But that, you know, people at the time weren't massively complaining about it. And so there was, you know, it that's what happened in the 80s, is people started to say, no, this isn't on. But it's a generational thing, you know, that has happened. And so all the comedians now saying, oh, we're being cancelled for saying this or saying that, we're all part of the, you know, the generational shift. Yeah. Or at least that there was another one then in the 80s where things became unacceptable.
Yeah, yeah, things change, cultures change, and rules change, yeah.
But, you know, it's sort of astonishing that kids were taught that. So, you know, and yeah, so I was essentially racist, but as a as a 7-year-old,
yeah,
there was a, you know, there
the
was...
The cutest kind.
I was a lovely...
Racist, yeah.
Hooray! but it's that feels astonishing to me that, you know, I was taught a nursery rhyme with the N-word in it.
Yeah.
And we did I'm sure we weren't taught this, but we had a... I don't think there's any way I can even describe what this one was. There's one about a Chinese man who, and that's putting it much more nicely than the rhyme does, goes to milk a cow. Are you aware of that?
No, I don't know this nursery rhyme. I mean, you're nervous. I'm just excited about representation in a nursery rhyme game.
I mean, it's not quite a nursery rhyme, because it is...
Because, I mean, if it's about him not being able to digest the milk, it's actually well observed, because Chinese people lack the lactose-breaking enzyme, so okay. It's actually quite...
Well, he wouldn't have any problem with that in this particular rhyme, is all I say, because okay. He doesn't end up with milk.
Oh, okay.
But you know, that's my, you know, in 50 in half a century, that's the journey that we've been on. And I think that what's, as much as the book is very moving and very honest portrayal of what you've, you know, what you've been through and the problems you face as well. You're very reasonable about mind your language. You're very reasonable about cultural appropriation. There's a great chapter about cultural appropriation and how basically you argue that as long as you're not being rude, it's okay to take things from other people's culture. Because we've got ourselves into a sort of mess, I think, about, because things have come from a really dark place, that something like someone wearing a traditional Chinese costume at a prom becomes an issue.
Yeah, because it's all tied up with ideas of imperialism and stealing and cultural appropriation now becomes conflated with theft, because there's a history of something pretty close to theft happening, you know, between the Western empires and the rest of the world. But, I mean, to say that, you know, I talk about Keziah Daum, who is this American teenager who at her prom wore this cheongsam. Cheongsam is this Chinese traditional dress. And she looks great in it. I mean, I felt a bit creepy looking up photos of a 16-year-old girl at prom and writing down, she looks wonderful, but I can qualify it as research for the book.
Peter Townsend had something similar in it. Have you written a whole book just to get around the fact you were Googling this?
Oh, no, she would have been 18 because she's graduated.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you very much. Can I get a round of applause, please? almost got one going there. But anyway, so she wore this cheongsam and she posted the photographs of her wearing it, and, the Twitter hate started, all these people saying, you know, my culture is not your prom dress. But then it's like, well... But she's not pulling her eyes back and going, me love you long time. She's wearing a dress that is important, that she thinks is beautiful enough to wear to the most important social event in her life up to that point. And so, you know, I'm just arguing for a more nuanced approach to it, a more reasonable approach to it. And frankly, culture is appropriation. It isn't a question about trying to remove appropriation out of culture. Culture is appropriation. It's how culture, develops.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting, and there's lots of funny stuff in there as well, I have to say. Oh, so it's
not just dry cultural analysis. But I wish it were, because that's what I really get my kicks on.
Well, you talk. There's a few things that resonate with me. You talk about shitting yourself in class when you were a child,
when I was a kid,
which I did as well.
You did?
I did it. Very, very similarly, story, which I think my audience know my story, but I shat myself. I was sort of nervous about going to the toilet to do a poo.
I hated it so much as a kid.
And you weren't allowed to do it. You weren't allowed to shit at school, really. And that was all through whole of school. But this was when I was 4 or 5. And I was wearing little red shorts. I can remember it very... And this goes into what you say in the book about remembering your humiliations. Yeah. And I just decided to shit my pants thinking it would stay in there. And the same as in your story as well, some kids were going, cool, what's that smell? And I said it was a naughty dog outside the window, which made no sense. The smell was in the room. It's like it would have to be a dog, like, shitting through the window, you know, firing diarrhea through the window. But they believed it because they were idiots. Until, like, a piece of shit was then discovered, slipped... out of, because I was wearing shorts, I just slipped out of
the
my pants.
The naughty dog has put his poo in my pants. This dog is so naughty.
But you, similarly, you managed to you convinced them, did you, that it was?
Well, I was sat in the library, and we were being given like the library rundown, being told basically how libraries worked. You know, pretty big day, And the librarian was talking about the duodecimal system or whatever. And I needed to poo. And I hated going to the toilet to do shit. It was scary. It was scary. Because then you're a child and you're trying to squeeze something out of you that is, relative to your size, pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, now, like, whatever, it's, 116th of my body mass. But at the time, it was like a quarter, maybe?
Yeah.
And it's scary. You go into the toilet wondering if you'll make it out alive, almost. And so I would try and postpone every poo as long as I could. And but this one I couldn't hold anymore, and I let it fall out into my pants, and I just there was also something embarrassing about wanting to go up, so I just pooed in my pants, and I thought I'd gone away with it, and the lady's going, you know, you keep the spine on the outside, and then and then I noticed the boy next to me, sort of, like I can see his nose hairs like spring up, like, you know, meerkats, you know, and I'm like, oh, here we fucking go. And the little boy turns around and looks at me, and he looks me dead in the eye and goes, I mean, very judgmental for a small boy now I think about it, but he goes, did you do a poo? And I thought about it, you know, and I remember so clearly weighing my options. I felt like I sat there thinking for like 3 minutes, but my thought process was, I've done a poo. He smelled something. Now, I can deny that I've done a poo.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's not what he turned around. He didn't. No, I've messed up the story. He turned around and he didn't say, did you do a poo? He said, did you fart? The little boy said, did you fart? And I started weighing my options then and thinking, well, I could deny the fart as well. But at this point, with this much smell, the idea that not even a fart has happened is for the birds. And I also then could... I was old enough to make the decision that being accused of a fart is less serious than being accused of a shit.
Yeah,
and being found guilty of a fart is less serious than being found guilty of a shit.
Yeah.
So then I went, yes, I have done a fart. And he went, all right then. And he... And he turned his head back and continued to learn about borrowing limits. And what that was to me was my first lesson in the idea of a lesser evil.
Yeah.
And that you can be presented with two unideal options.
Yeah.
And instead of working fruitlessly for a good option, which you're not going to get, you should choose the less bad bad option, which in this case was being found guilty of a fart.
Yeah.
I learned
Your underwear are tight as well. That's the other...
Sorry?
Make sure your underwear are tight enough to contain the poo.
Yeah. And make sure that there's at all times a dog in close enough proximity could blame it on.
Naughty dog.
Naughty dog.
Naughty dog. You can blame anything on naughty dog. Believe you me. Believe you me, my fine friends.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, and also, we will come back to the book because there's lots to talk about, but you have got a Netflix special out at the moment called Philly Philly Wang Wang.
Not just out at the moment, out in perpetuity, I
okay.
imagine. Unless they decide to take it down.
I think they might take it down.
Has it happened yet?
Yeah. Oh, no, they haven't taken yours down. I had things on there that they took down.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well, because they bought them for a certain length of time. And
Yeah, well, I don't... Yeah, that wasn't the deal here, so I guess...
No, but yours is made by Netflix.
Yeah,
for
so the
Netflix.
Only reason they take it down was that they really didn't like it.
Yeah. Or you just do something so awful that they can't have you on the channel anymore.
That's true.
Yeah. Let's look on the bright side.
Or maybe they run out of space. You think they'll ever be like, we need to free up 3 gig?
They might.
And they just arrange files by file size. And they just, like just a desktop cleanup.
One of the things you do is an impression of a sperm.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a part in a film you could do. You might have a part in the new Pixar film.
Okay.
About Charlie Bucket.
I've no reason to believe that's how a sperm sounds, but it fits the look, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's actually very similar. I was on the program Taskmaster.
Yes.
And there was a task that was best sound, and I did essentially that sound, but it's really gross, but you can't get enough. Like sperm.
Yeah. The Taskmaster appearance was, you know, I enjoyed it at the time, but I had to go back and watch some of the tasks again because there was only one thing in my mind from your Taskmaster, and I watched it all. I think it was the first series I properly watched the whole thing for your series.
Yeah.
So I did see all of the tasks, but all I could remember, my memory is going, I'm quite old, was what you were wearing.
Yes.
Well, more specifically, the shape of something underneath what you were wearing.
Yeah, you'll be talking about my dick and balls.
I am talking about your dick and balls.
I can't believe how often I have to say this. I did not intend for that to happen, for my dick and balls to be that visible. Because in Google pictures of Bruce Lee wearing that outfit, you don't see his dick and balls.
No.
But it turns out you have to be quite physically fit to carry off a tight-fitting yellow onesie.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, I guess I'm just very well endowed.
Yeah.
And so the first day, once you put on that costume, you're committed to it because you have to wear it through all the tasks. And so the first day I put it on, I felt a bit tight, but it felt fine. I was like, fine, whatever. And the crew, I noticed, was stifling the occasional laugh. But no one said there was a problem. I now realize in retrospect, they just realized it was good TV.
Yeah.
And so no one said anything for months while I did these tasks in this outfit. And then late on in the process, we do the first group task day, and they bring in Rod Gilbert and James Acaster. And it's the first time I filmed any tasks with anyone who isn't a member of the crew. And the second Rod and James see me, they go, what the fuck are you wearing? And it was... I felt like Eve eating the apple. It was like first I'd become aware of the shame of nudity. And you can actually see, if you watch that series, the first group task day is the first day that I'm covering my genitals, because it's the first day I've become aware of my shame.
But do you think that's... Because, you know, yeah, since Taskmaster, it's been an upward trajectory for your career. I'm talking about. Do you think it was the outline of your genitals? Because that's a lot, often like young women do that sort of thing, don't they? They'll appear on TV in sort of skimpy outfits and become... Was that your... Do you think the accidental...
I was gender-busting the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
it's nice to have a gimmick, you know, and your gimmick is we've all seen the rough shape of your genitals when flaccid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled. Oh, I wish I was flaccid. no, I mean, I was surprised and thrilled that people took it with such good humor. I thought people would be disgusted and appalled. And what's weird, actually, is how many families come and say, I'll bring their kids, and like, our kids love you on Taskmaster. And I go, I didn't know they were allowed to watch that. And that makes me feel a bit uncomfortable. But
yeah.
But no, people seem to have taken it on the chin. As any good sport would. And yeah, it's odd because, like, having all the stuff I did on it diluted to my dick and balls.
Yeah.
But it's fine. It's good to have something to be remembered by.
Yeah.
And
people will remember your dick and balls long after you're gone. That'll be the last memory of you.
I think 500 years, yeah. I think it'll be the last time anyone mentions my dick and balls.
It'll be interesting to see how long it'll be. And I know you did appear on the Edinburgh version of the show, and we did talk about it, but I do want to mention again, just because I want everyone in the world to see this who hasn't seen this, but you did a video of Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah.
And the Centrum vitamin pill advert. I mean, we can't talk about it, but you really have to watch it. And I don't think there's a thing that every single time I see it, I laugh as much as I did the first time. And then I can watch it four times around and I'm still laughing. It's one of the funniest things that's ever existed.
Thanks so much, man. I really appreciate that. It was a Sunday in a hotel room in Melbourne that was well used in the end, I guess. I filmed it in the morning. No, I think I wrote it in the morning, filmed it around noon, and then spent the evening editing it and put it out. And it was just like really good luck that this ad had come out with Tom Hiddleston. It's for a Chinese vitamin brand, Centrum, and it was filmed in portrait mode so that it could be played on an iPhone. And it just so happened that the place he was in looked very much like the hotel room I was in, and it all kind of fell together. I got a message on Twitter when this ad came up from the comedy writer Andrew Dawson, and he was like, "You should do a video where you're his girlfriend, doing his lapel, his collar up." And I thought, "Oh yeah," and then I thought, maybe instead of the girlfriend, he's broken into my house, because comedically that's an easier premise to perpetuate, because there's conflict there, you can just keep going. Yeah, yeah. And so I was like, okay, he's broken into my house. And then so I just filmed. I mean, I looked absolutely crazy. I was just like, film myself with one hand, and but it all kind of worked out. And because he said all these mad things in this advert, that he was basically just saying punchlines, and I just had to write the setups for them. And he's such a weird guy anyway that it all kind of came together. Tom Hiddleston has seen it, apparently.
Has he?
Apparently he has seen it.
I bet he doesn't find it funny.
Well, he says he finds it funny.
Yeah, he doesn't, though. He is weird, but he is weird, right? He's a weird, and I think that's the... And when you see him, and I've seen you talk about him as well, you picked on him in another TV show, I think. But the choices he makes, like you talk about him doing an impression of Robert De Niro to Robert De Niro.
Oh, it's a great piece of footage.
Yeah.
It's truly incredible to watch Robert De Niro not know how to react and try to be polite, but also wanting to convey to everyone watching at home that he's not enjoying this.
And it's a big baller move. If you're going to do that, an impression of someone to someone, you have to be. It has to be the fucking best impression in the world. And Robert De Niro is quite an easy one to do, right? He's not that good.
No, it's not a great
he's done a bad impression of Robert De Niro to Robert De Niro, who will have get that every day. Someone will come up to go. That's better. That's what I did there is better than.
Okay. That was really good. That's good. Yeah, yeah. But it's such a superpower to do something not very good and go at the end, that was great. I'm brilliant. And that's why he's in The Night Manager and I'm not, because he just goes, I'm great.
Have Centrum, who I would never have heard of without you, got in touch and offered you any free pills?
Not so much as a multivit. Not so much as a tab of D.
Because I would say your parody has probably been seen more than the advert, because the advert was local, wasn't it, to wherever
China, presumably.
China,
yeah,
it's pretty big.
It's also like it's a thing that's been seen. It's the thing of mine that I've made that's probably been seen more than anything else I've done, which is weird because it was just filmed on an iPhone in a hotel room.
Yeah,
but that's the world we live in, Richard.
This is.
Yeah, it's a mad world, isn't it?
It is. It's crazy. It's a mad, mad world.
I think these are crazy times we're living in, you know?
You were born in the same hospital as Robbie Williams?
Yeah. North Staff's Maternity Hospital.
Did they make a big deal of it when you came out? They said,
when I came out, my mother?
Yeah. Got they had first Roy Williams, now this.
Now this guy. No, weirdly, the doctor that delivered me was a Malaysian doctor in Stoke, which was quite coincidental.
Yeah.
Not very funny, but incredible bit of what's it when it's not, it's luck, but it's not necessarily positive. It's just an unlikely thing to happen. But
yeah, that's what it's called.
What's it called? No, it's like, no, coincidence is right, but there's like a wankier word I'm reaching for. Serendipity. Thank you very much. Right.
There's a film, I was thinking there's a film with John Cusack in it that's terrible, and I was trying to think of the title of the film, and I couldn't get to it.
Thank you. Serendipity, yeah. Very serendipitous, my favourite word.
I liked in the book the distinction, which I'd not heard before. I don't know if you coined this, the fact that, well, there's quite a lot about the terminology for Asian people anyway, and we'll get onto that, but that Asians divide into cricket Asians and eat weird shit Asians.
Oh, yeah.
is that your... Is that your observation, or is that something you've...
That's my observation. Yeah, that's nothing special. Yeah, I say there's essentially two types of Asians in the world. There's two main categories. I mean, there's more if you have the time, but fundamentally, when we hear the word Asian, we go, is it that one or that one? And it's cricket Asian and eats Richard Asian. Yeah. Half of Asia plays cricket, and the other half eats crickets. That's right. How... That's the mnemonic I go by. Yeah.
In the book, you do discuss the ethnicity box tick thing that we all have to do every time we get one of those
like a diversity questionnaires. Survey.
Yeah, diversity survey. You don't have to do it, or you can say you don't want to fill it in. But
prefer not to say. I've never had the confidence to tick prefer not to say. I don't know. I just kind of is like, wouldn't you like to know? Kind of think, who do you think you are? Prefer not to say. I always say.
Yeah. But it's difficult to know what to say, as you've discussed it, because it seems very insensitive. For something that's meant to be presumably sensitive and about inclusion, it seems to not really have got the wording right.
Yeah, it sort of stems from the indecision in the UK specifically about who the word Asian refers to.
Yeah.
Because it's quite common that I'll be filling this form in under race. It'll be like black Caribbean, black African, white British, Asian, and then Chinese and other groups. And it's like, first of all, I think there are enough Chinese people in the world that we get our own box and aren't grouped in with other groups. It's like, if you're Chinese, you tick that box. If you're a member of the Sami people of Lapland, then you're also in the same box. And the other thing is like, but there's already Asian. Why is there a box for Asian and then another box for Chinese? Now, because I'm mixed, there's usually a box for mixed, so then I take mixed. And then within mixed, you have to choose your version of mixed. Is it white and black, white and Asian? And I go, oh, well, I'm white and Asian. Ah, but in the first category, Chinese is an Asian. So then instead, I take mixed other. So in a diversity survey that is presumably created in order to combat the feelings of otherness, I literally have to tick a box that says I am other.
It does seem crazy, but if they put your distinction of the Asian, that would be it, wouldn't it? Cricket Asian, or weird shit Asian.
Then that's what I've been campaigning for, and it's what I really want to talk about tonight. Is to add the boxes cricket Asian and eat weird shit Asian to the national census.
Interesting. I'm part Asian.
Oh!
My hair is Asian.
Yes,
I've got Asian hair.
I was thinking on the way in.
Yeah.
Richard has got some Last Samurai shit going on up top. Yeah. It's lovely, silky.
I went to, when I was in Thailand for quite a while. Yeah, I was in Thailand for about 2 months. Well, like for.
I don't know, Richard, when a man of your age goes to Thailand for 2 months, it's not a good look. No matter how much your hair looks like theirs.
I was in Thailand for 2 months on holiday. with my girlfriend. I got my hair cut because I hadn't had my hair cut. Oh, yeah. And the Thai barber said, you have Thai or you have Asian hair.
Right. Are you sure he wasn't saying, do you want a hair tie?
he was saying because it grows, because of the direction it grows in as much as anything, and the way it grows, I think he said it was very like Thai hair. Oh. So, you know, I could write a book about being partly Asian. the perspective of how most of me is English,
yeah,
but my hair comes from Asia.
Yeah.
And how that's affected me.
But him calling your hair Thai, I think statisticians talk about this as a base rate fallacy, because presumably all the hair he's cut is Thai.
Yeah.
So you bring into him human hair, he's gone, wow, this is like Thai hair. But of course it is. It's the only hair he's ever seen.
I think he was on the beach, you know, he was a barber on the beach of a tourist beach. I think he cut a lot of European hair.
Right.
Okay. And he was, you know, impressed with my...
On the beach?
Well, no, you know, he was by the beach, so it was a tourist. But it was a tourist spot, so I think he would have cut a lot of people's hair.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't know how many tourists get their hair cut on holiday.
Yeah.
But Thailand's the kind of place you go to for a little while sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they get it cut enough that he set up shop next to a hotel.
So, you know, I turn up and he goes, wow.
Wow, Thai hair.
So Thai hair.
You can have a discount.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Just letting you know. Should we share something?
It's nice hair. You're not going to hear anything else from me. Okay. It's lovely hair. You look great.
Thanks. I do my best. and also, there does feel like a lot of similarities in our hair and our upbringing. But there was lots in the book that I identified with, I think, just in terms of, because we're obviously comedians and we're both quite nerdy, introverted guys.
Yeah.
Although I think you've said something that maybe it was a newspaper interview, you can only think of one extrovert comedian who you don't name. I think it probably is true that a lot of comedians aren't full out extroverts on the whole.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are a couple of comedians I think who are like, you know, they come out there. And I don't mean to disparage that way. I only say it to point out that it is rare among comedians to have extroverted tendencies. I think because coming up with the jokes is quite an introverted sort of, you know, thing to do. You kind of have to hole up and think in your head all the time and come up with cheeky little tricks to make people laugh. And, you know, you're not instead of going out and enjoying life. You're just staying at home and coming up with little tricks in your little lab. And I think comedy is essentially about, like, and stand-up especially is about overanalyzing things. And I think that's what introverts do. Introverts overanalyze. Yeah. Extroverts don't analyze enough. Usually they go jet skiing and fall off bridges and, you know, they have a good time and they die in extraordinary ways. Whereas introverts, we stay safe, we come up with ideas and we die eventually of loneliness. But
it's that weird disparity. When you were a shy kid and, like, when you suggested being in the school play, the teacher thought you meant in the audience because they couldn't imagine you.
Oh, yeah. Well, my first ever gig was at school in Bath when I moved to the UK. And there was a comedy night put on by the drama teacher called Club Ha Ha. Strange name for a teacher. anyway. And it was predominantly to showcase the student improv team that he was coaching and teaching. But he advertised that there were 5-minute stand-up spots. They're called 5-minute open spots, available to anyone who wanted to sign up. And so I went up to the drama studio and there was a list outside and he was working on it. And I said, can I do the show? And he said, yeah, I think we've got a seat left. And I was like, no, to do the stand-up. And he went, okay. Yeah, and he looked very nervous to let me do it. Because I wasn't a really funny kid. I was good at math, so I did a bit of music, and I kept myself to myself, really. And so, he probably thought, this kid's going to die on stage. And I went on, and I did 5 minutes of pretty much stolen material. I did well. Like, I had the technique, and I got the laughs where I was meant to, and it worked, and that was my first ever gig, but it wasn't like an expected turn for me. I wasn't like a class clown or anything.
And what do you think? I mean, if you are, because I was shy as well, I think, maybe not in the exactly the same way as you, but it's, but it, what do you think? You know, most people would look at being a comedian and going on stage and thinking, well, that's the last thing I would do, however comfortable I am in social situations. What do you think means that as an introvert, one is able to stand on a stage and tell jokes? Is it just the safety of it? Or
yeah, it's the structure of it. It's the agreement that I can talk and everyone must listen for an allotted amount of time and then we can go. There's a clarity there of who's meant to talk. What makes me anxious, I'm far more anxious like in a group of five people at a pub and everyone's like throwing jokes at each other. My only thought is, I don't want to ruin this. And so I won't say anything.
Yeah.
Because there's no agreement as to who should be speaking. You have to vouch for yourself. You have to present them with, this is what I have to contribute. And I think you'll find it qualifies. In stand-up, in the performance setting, that qualification is presumed. And so that's what drew me to it.
Yeah, it is. I think it is true that largely speaking, there's this. I mean, is it something missing in comedians or something extra in comedians?
Yeah, definitely. Just acknowledgement. I think a lot of the time. I mean, when I started doing stand up to show that everyone that see I can be funny if I want to, and I have lots of time to prepare, and I write the words down on a list. And yeah, it's kind of to show off a bit as well, you know. We're fundamentally show offs.
Yeah,
we're shy show offs.
It's an odd thing, but it's I don't know. It feels a little bit like you've sort of become cooler through the last few years.
Me?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, you've sort of sharpened up your image a little bit. It's kind of interesting watching your stand up because there's a sort of almost arrogant confidence behind it as well as it being quite, you know what I mean? It's quite an interesting persona, which I think has changed a little bit.
No, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. My persona is more like high status now, I guess. It's always been a bit high status. But I'm trying to bring some silliness into it too. And as I've gotten older, I've just become a little more confident, a little more comfortable with my looks and like wearing glasses and stuff. And I used to wear like little skinny glasses because I thought the smaller they are, the less people will notice them. Maybe people won't realize they even wear glasses, but they just they're all the more obvious because they're just two like black sort of slits across your face. And so I got like these big old frames, and they're a little more good for my face, I think. And it means like I'm owning it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I get these glasses at a shop called Moscot. They're really beautiful glasses, but I embarrass myself there all the time. And the first time I went in, I'd been encouraged to ask for a media discount. There's another comedian was like, I get all my shit free or at least discounted. I go in and say, give me a media discount. And this is not my personality to be asking for media discounts. But I thought, you know what? I'm gonna get a media discount. I'm Phil Wang. I've shown my genitals to the nation. I deserve cheaper frames. So I went in and I picked up the glasses. Oh yeah, lovely. And then when he was ringing them up, I said, "Do you do a media discount?" And he said, "What?" And I was like, already losing confidence. I was like, "Media discount. I'm in the media." And he kind of went, I'll give you a student discount. Which was his very nice way of saying, I don't know who the fuck you are. And I want you out of my shop.
I get my glasses for free when other guests just leave them behind. So that's how I do it. Works a treat. It's... what was I going to say? I'll just have a... let me have a think. No, I've got nothing. I'll ask you an emergency question. I'll ask you a would you rather question.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see how this goes. Would you rather... this is an interesting question about introversion versus extroversion in some ways. Would you rather what would you rather have named after you? The public toilet in the centre of your town or an embarrassing disease? The toilets would have a big neon-sized sign above them saying the Phil Wang toilet. The embarrassing disease would be mentioned on the news a lot and be caught by about one in four people. Realistically, you would also have to be the first person to have the disease for it to be named after you. if you have a common name, you might be able to convince people it wasn't you. Which you sort of...
Wang is as common as it gets.
I don't know if they would call it the Wang disease, though. Because that... whatever. Okay. Especially if it was actually on the penis. If it was a penis disease, they called it the Wang disease. They'd have to call it the Phil Wang disease.
That would be perfect, yeah. Especially if it was a disease where your penis sort of got unnaturally engorged. Because it literally filled your Wang.
Yeah.
The Phil Wang disease. Then I could... I could say... with some level of believability that, no, it's not my name, it's just the description of the disease.
Yeah. People would go, what, the scientists who named it used the term Wang in the name of the disease?
It's the German word for it. I think I'd go for the disease.
Okay.
I think a legacy is a legacy.
Yeah.
The toilet, it'd be run down eventually, and, you know, the city wouldn't look after it after a while. Get turned into some rubbish speakeasy.
It's good to be remembered, isn't it? That's the thing. It's good to just
exactly
be remembered.
Remember regardless of what of.
And the disease would always be there, wouldn't it? Those people who have the diseases named after them, it's forever, isn't it?
You know who I envy? Heimlich.
Yeah.
He's the only one with like the cure named after him. He's got a maneuver named after him. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
I mean, imagine Parkinson's looking fucking Heimlich. He got. People are happy when his thing happens. Someone gets saved when his thing happens.
Yeah. And they don't have a name. It should be the person who first choked on something. The disease should be named.
The disease of choking.
The disease of not being able to eat your food properly. Imagine that being named after you. Heimlich came along, rescued that person as well.
Also, it's not a manoeuvre, it's squeezing someone until it pops out. That's just squeezing. Sorry. I didn't know I had such beef with Heimlich.
Yeah, I don't know, it's good to know. Right, I'll do one more and then we will... Okay, we'll get... Because we got a bit morbid towards the end of the last one as well. Would you rather know how you'll die or what will happen to you after you die?
Oh.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather know what happens to me after I die. Because if you know how you're going to die, that's torture. Yeah, and you'd be looking out for it all the time, right?
Well, you'd be able to avoid it for a long time. If they say you're going to fall out of a window, just keep away from windows.
But in order for that warning to be true, it has to eventually happen.
It does, but eventually you'd get bored of being alive and jump out a window.
The mental torture of being terrified of windows eventually causes you to jump out a window.
Wow. You accept it. You accept it's your fate.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. God, that's an interesting...
But then knowing what happens after you die, that could be more torture, couldn't it?
I guess I'm arrogantly assuming it would be nice.
Right.
After.
What if it is, as it is, nothing?
Yes. I mean, that's the most likely.
Yeah, well, what it definitely is. So I'm telling you, when you die, it's like before you were born.
Oh, I see. That's what you mean. I thought you meant that you know how what happens to what everyone else thinks of you after you die.
Oh, okay.
And what people say about you, like a sort of a Christmas Carol kind of thing where you float about. And
they can have that as well. You can have that interpretation as well.
Right. Okay.
So you'd rather know what people thought about you after you died.
Yeah.
Why not ask them while you're alive? I'll tell you right now. That's easy to find out. What happens in the afterlife? Is there an afterlife?
It seems highly unlikely. There's no reason to believe anything happens, but it could. Hmm. But then the awkward question is there a before life? If there is no abyss, what were we before we were born?
Good question.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't think there is an afterlife, but I still will say sorry to God right before I die. Just in case.
Just before you jump out the window?
Yeah. BTW, God, sorry about all the wanks. All right, bye! And then just...
I mean, if you knew you were going to die in a plane crash, that would be torturous because you would know that, you know, every plane you got on, you were essentially possibly going to murder everyone else on the plane. So you'd have to never get on a plane, but know one day you'd have to get on a plane. Mm. So you'd have to just say, get out! Yeah. Everyone get out! Set it on autopilot. That'll probably make it crash. There's another self-fulfilling prophecy.
I like this. This is like some Twilight Zone.
Because then
if you're like, I know this is going to crash, they'd probably kick you off the plane.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, fuck, I've got to do this all over again. The next time I get on a plane.
Yeah.
Oh.
It'd probably be a heart attack or something like that. That's the thing. So then there's nothing you can. Like, if you're going to die in your sleep, that'd be that. If you're going to die in your sleep of a heart attack every time you went to sleep, oh, is it tonight? I mean, you should be thinking that anyway, because it could be.
I guess that's the best way to go. Yeah. The way I want to go is I want to be. Have you seen Mulan, the Disney animated movie?
Yes, but I'm not.
Lu Shang, I think, is the name of the villain. At the end, he gets spoilers. He gets shot up into the sky on a big rocket and he explodes like a firework.
Okay.
And I've always wanted that. I want to be set up on a platform.
Yeah.
Like I've been condemned in the Wild West.
Yeah.
And strapped a huge, beautiful red rocket, and all my friends and family are there. In front of me, and I'm strapped up, and I go one by one saying thank you for everything you've brought to my life.
Yeah,
I love you, and then move on to the next one. I've got a couple of enemies as well, maybe, that I set the record straight. But they're mainly friends and family, and then I go, it is time. And someone lights the fuse, and everyone puts on their Macs. And don't say, oh, this is my death. Don't get sensitive. I've come to terms with it. And I get fired up into the sky and it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a celebration.
And it's so Chinese.
That's it. It's good luck as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that good luck to be blown up in the sky by a firework. I'd say that's pretty bad luck.
It's good luck for everyone else.
Showered in your entrails that they're wearing Max.
I would have the firework designed so that it would burn at high enough temperature that I'm completely incinerated.
Okay.
The Max are just a precaution.
Okay. The smell of the delicious smell of your burning flesh.
Yeah, my last meal is really delicious, so I smell good when I go up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've thought this through, Richard.
You really have. It's very nice to know. Let me see if there's anything else I wanted to talk to you about. Otherwise I'll just tell you to fuck off. I think we've got most of it. I think within your stand-up special, there's an argument you could, you know, everyone's looking for sort of the right-wing comedians, and there's a sort of shift towards some less left-wing views, or you at least within it you discuss the fact you used to be socialist, but now you're not.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that was mainly of... I just grew up a lot in my mid-20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and realized that there's no good or nice politics. It's all just different people with different aims.
Yeah.
And different, drives and incentives. And... but I wouldn't say I'm a right-wing comic. I'm pretty centrist, really. And you say
you were socialist until you start making money, and then now you're not socialist anymore.
But that's true of everyone.
Yeah, I think it is.
That's true of the socialists.
Yeah,
that was true of the communists. You know, and so I only do the bit to say, you know, human nature means that we only really believe in what benefits us.
There's an argument. I think that I find it interesting looking at, again, some of the very left-wing comedians of my generation have turned into the sort of most right-wing or libertarian, which is similar, people. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them have become sort of, rather than being comedians, just sort of becoming political spokesmen. And they were the guys on the marches. And I've always been fairly apolitical.
Yeah. I can't really think of who you might... In my mind, all the sort of... That generation of left-wing comics are still...
Some of them still are.
Firebrands.
Yeah. Some of them still are, but it's interesting to see the ones that aren't. And some of them aren't well-known. One of them is quite well-known. But for some people, that it's the same thing. It's within that joke there is a truth. For some people, they are left-wing when they're young because they don't have anything.
Yeah.
And then when they have something, they go, oh, now I've got... So it's a sort of self... Some people are left-wing for self-interest and some people remain left-wing, I think.
Well, there's that adage, if you're young and right-wing, you don't have a heart, and if you're old and left-wing, you don't have a brain.
Yeah.
And that basically runs true. And
go for the right-wing thing because there aren't, you know, they're trying to get more right-wing. But if you're right-wing,
just
push that a bit further. Start being a bit more racist. You're pretty racist as it is.
No, but I mean, this is what I'm saying, you know. I mean, the last general election showed that the left wing is perfectly capable of being racist too. So it's not like we're picking between racist and not racist. It's different. What flavor of racism are you willing to tolerate? But also, I think in stand-up you should do something that's surprising and interesting. And it's not interesting to go up and say easy left-wing things and get easy applauses. And I've never been interested in that. I don't like applauses. As much of my stand-up career will testify to.
Good. Well, and there's loads. I don't want to give away all the stuff in it, but I there's some great stuff about male contraception. That's a very, you can listen to some of this on there's a podcast, and you do a podcast called Bud Pod.
Bud Pod. Yeah.
With your buddy, Pianavelli. It's just two blokes talking a load of shit to each other.
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine it working. No, it's like they haven't even prepared anything half the time. Don't even know where they're going. It's pathetic. But you can. There's some of the Netflix specials up as podcasts as well.
If
you haven't got Netflix. You can't find someone else who'll give you their password.
Yeah, get it before they have to take it off to clear some HD space.
Comedy will keep on. They'll keep on shifting comedy on. As tastes change, look at Mind Your Language. You'll be the Mind Your Language of the 2020s. People go, can you believe in the 2020s people used to laugh at this guy? He's doing a Japanese accent in that bit. Look at that. Can you believe that was allowed?
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to cement your legacy, just to be morally reprehensible to the next generation,
But, you know, we are comedians. We should be morally reprehensible. The book Side Splitter is brilliant. So get in the audio. As always, I recommend the audio books because you get the comedian reading it, and especially with comedians' books, I find it's really great to get all the nuances of the comedy within it.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because it's very hard to write delivery in a book.
Yeah,
and you realize when you write your first book as a comedian, a lot of how I've been getting on with this has been shtick and timing. And now I have to trust the reader to have good timing.
Yeah.
But it's been it's fun to write.
Well, that's when things are written down. That's what you find. I find that with social media as well. People go, you've been annoyed about that. Go, no, you're reading that in the wrong tone of voice.
Yeah.
Oh, hit a nerve. No, you haven't.
Also, you've noticed joke tweets that do very well on Twitter never do well on stage.
Right.
And jokes that do well on stage never do well on Twitter, I find. Because it's like a different thing, you know.
Yeah. It is. What a point to end the...
What a worthless anorak point.
Do watch it. Philly Wang Wang. Hardly anything about Philly Wang Wang's or Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in the whole thing. Very disappointed.
No, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang has never been part of it. It never even came to my mind that Chitty Chitty Bang Bang had anything to do with my name. Someone once said, "Oh, I like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang." I went, "Oh yeah, I guess it is," but it's just my name in a weird way.
Okay.
Just keep on hammering that name. Just get people to remember it.
Yeah, people remember it. It's okay.
Thanks, man.
It's going pretty well. You've got new sheets.
New cheeks.
Sheets.
Oh yeah. I do have new sheets.
Have you got new cheeks as well? You are sitting down. Maybe there's some work. There's been some work in that. It's been absolutely lovely to have you on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Philly Wang Wang.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Come and see us next week. There's still some tickets. Goodbye, my fine friend. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Rich Tarring, and my guest, Phil Wang. The music is by Scant Regard. Thank you very much to Chris Evans, Not That One, and everyone at Go Faster Strike, and all the people who know me. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for all their hard work on this show. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz, GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not go to GoFasterStripe.com and see what they have on offer? It's a fantastic place with some lovely, lovely things for you to listen to and look at.
Imagine Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. Do come and say hello after the show if you enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.